It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
You look at what's happening on our border, and you see people coming up by the thousands. And frankly, if we didn't show them strength and a strong border, you would have hundreds of thousands of people pouring into our country. We are doing a job, and we will continue to do a job. We're doing what's right. Republicans are committed to halting this incursion and defending the sovereign borders of the United States. We are sending a simple message to the lawless caravans and to the illegal trespassers marching toward our border. It's very simple. Turn back now. Go back home. We will not let you in. We are not going to let you in.
Sandy Rios with you. That was President Donald Trump at Biloxi, Mississippi last night. He was at a rally in Tupelo, which is, of course, the headquarters of the American Family Association. And a lot of our staff, at least some of our staff, was there. You heard Steve Jordahl from American Family News giving that great report a few minutes ago. I think Tim Wildman, our president, was there. So it was an exciting encounter for American Family Association, which actually has a very good relationship with this president at this point. That's what happened last night. And, of course, the president was talking about immigration as he should. And we're going to get to that in just a second. But meanwhile, it's a very big day in Mississippi. There is an election today. It's the final race of the 2018 Senate cycle. And it is a race between Cindy Hyde-Smith and Mike Espy. Peter Ducey did a good report on it last night, and here it is.
In Mississippi, the run-up to the runoff has revolved around race.
Yeah. I just want to say hello.
And now features a rumor about the Republican.
I heard in Washington, they're calling her the hanging senator.
Democrat Mike Espy's campaign continues to focus heavily on Republican Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith's hot mic moment. Hyde-Smith insists the comment was a joke.
For anyone that was offended by my comments, I certainly apologize.
But now she's laying low, and Espy is hammering her hanging remarks.
They were hurtful to the millions of people in Mississippi of goodwill who just can hear what that means, and they can sense that it's a throwback to a bygone era that we're not going back to again.
Senator Hyde-Smith is also being scrutinized for sporting part of a Confederate uniform in an old snapshot and for joking about making it harder for young liberals to vote. Now a cascade of corporate contributors have asked for their donations back, but Hyde-Smith is trying to change the subject away from accusations she's a racist and towards Espy's time as a lobbyist.
Have you ever been paid $750,000 from a foreign dictator charged with crimes against humanity? Mike Espy has. It's true. Espy was a registered foreign agent for the Ivory Coast, and he lied about it.
Espy's record also includes an indictment for charges of accepting improper gifts as Bill Clinton's agriculture secretary, charges he later beat.
I was indicted, but an indictment is an accusation.
Despite all the controversy, President Trump is doubling down with a double rally day.
We're going to do two, and I hope you're all coming.
This is the first time ever President Trump has had two big rallies in a single day for a single candidate other than himself. And a lot of the big issues voters were worried about 3 weeks ago, like Brett Kavanaugh, are ancient history. So now Republicans are trying to make this runoff all about Trump.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you, Peter Ducey of Fox. Now, this race today is important, and that's why I'm spending just a minute on this, because this is the last Senate race of the 2018 cycle. And if you think it doesn't matter who sits in those Senate seats, it might not be Cindy Hyde-Smith might not be your first choice, Mike Espy might not be your choice, but you have a clear choice because their policy differences are great. And so if you want more of the circus that took place when Brett Kavanaugh was elected, you know who you can vote for. I would just say, in regard to Cindy Hyde Smith, I saw the picture last night. They were talking about, I think we have a picture of my husband in a rebel uniform, a rebel cap. When he was a kid, he loved the cap. So I guess that must make him a racist. You know, I mean, that was the garb of the Confederacy, and it's a costume. So, I mean, I don't know if Cindy Hyde Smith is a racist, but I would say you'd need a little more evidence to prove that than that. So anyway, but so it goes. But the racist today, and those of you in Mississippi, please, please, you are, even though you're not seeing it much on the news, and it's true, you're not. They're not emphasizing it. This is a very important race. And, you know, in your hands sits the next seat, and also will have tremendous impact on whether President Trump can get judges through. Look, we already have Jeff Flake saying he's not going to let judges through. Of course, this is the lame duck session, so that's a little different. But we know that there are senators who are fighting against President Trump, and so Republican senators. And so it matters that that he has support if you feel like the things that he's working for are things that you want him to work for. All right, so there you go. That's the race today in Mississippi, and I hope that you will please get out and vote. Remind your friends, because it's an unusual day. Nobody else in the country is voting, and so they're not going to hear it any place else. They need to be reminded. Well, you would think that the president of the United States had, separated mothers from their children, which was the accusation most recently at the border. But now a picture came across the wire of a mother and her two children running allegedly away from tear gas, and this is how the media responded.
U.S. Border Patrol agents deployed tear gas on Central Americans seeking asylum. This includes women and children.
Trouble at the border. U.S. agents fired tear gas at hundreds of migrants trying to rush into this country illegally.
Border Patrol used tear gas to try and stop them. In this photo, shared around the world, shows a family running from the fumes.
Photos of children running from tear gas featured on the front pages of newspapers across the country.
Tear gas being fired at some of these migrants trying to cross the border, including women and children seen choking from the tear gas. Should border agents be able to use tear gas in self-defense?
So there you go. That's how it's being positioned. Of course, it's so predictable, but most people, that's what they watch and that's what they see. So that's what your neighbors are going to be repeating. Again, could I say our news media has turned into nothing more than Pravda, nothing more than propaganda. Just as the Russian people were propagandized for 60 years, the East Germans by the East German police and the Russians. It's an amazing thing. China, propaganda. This is really what we're living under. It's hard to imagine. I was just reading this morning. Some people believe that picture was completely staged of the woman running with her two children. In fact, they say there are pictures taken of it. It's blown up, and you see people in the background just standing still. There doesn't seem to be any problem for people surrounding this mother and her children. And there are other reasons why many people feel, including Ben Shapiro's media outlet, that it was completely staged. And that brings me to reading something to you. This is a Twitter, what they call a Twitter thread. If you don't tweet, then that doesn't mean anything to you. But it's a series of comments by people. That would be a thread. This one's by a gentleman named John Hayward, and this is what he says. The media manipulation effort was inspired by the success of Kids in Cages freakout, 100% Stalinist propaganda drive that required people to forget about Obama putting migrant children in cells. It worked. So now they want pics of Trump gassing children on the border. There's a heavy area of Pollywood around the whole thing as well. If the Palestinians can stage huge theatrical performances of victimhood with the willing cooperation of Western media, why shouldn't the migrant caravan organizers expect the same? So here we are, an angry mob assaults the border with some women and children in tow. The left is straight up telling you that fighting back and defending the border is immoral, equivalent to a Nazi war crime. The morality of using force in the service of the law is under attack. And without force behind it, the law becomes a battlefield where the will to power is tested. Do you want your sovereignty as badly as your adversaries want to take it away from you? They have calculated that you do not. And I do believe that's what's happening. That's why I talk about it so often. And just for the record, I'm sure you've heard by now that President Obama used the same thing, tear gas on the border, in 2013. And the Heritage is reporting this morning on three past occasions, presidents, Nixon, Reagan, and Lyndon Johnson, had to close the border completely. So there is legal precedence. The president's been talking about closing the border. We think there's something like 8,000 now down on the border trying to get over. This is another interesting addendum. We talked about John Roberts speaking up, criticizing really President Trump. His statement was basically, we do not have Obama judges or Trump judges, Bush judges or Clinton judges. What we have is an extraordinary group of dedicated judges doing their level best to do equal right to those appearing before them. That independent judiciary is something we should all be thankful for. Now, that's what John Roberts said. And so President Trump responded by saying, sorry, Chief Justice John Roberts, but you do indeed have Obama judges. And they have a much different point of view than the people who are charged with the safety of our country. He went on to say, Justice Roberts can say what he wants, but the Ninth Circuit is a complete and total disaster. It is out of control, has a horrible reputation, is overturned more than any circuit in the country, 79%, and is used to get an almost guaranteed results. Judges must not legislate security and safety at the border or anywhere else. They know nothing about it and are making our country unsafe. Our great law enforcement professionals must be allowed to do their job. If not, there will be only bedlam, chaos, injury, and death. We want the Constitution as written. Now, that's the president, who's, of course, really dumb and lies all the time and is filled with ego. And the only reason he's worried about the border is because he's trying to get reelected, right? Or he's trying to get Congress to become Republican. But wait a second. We're, what, 2 weeks past the election? So if you don't believe what the president has to say, let me read to you from Conservative HQ. An analysis of court decisions. This is the way it's come down. Democratically appointed, mostly Obama-appointed judges have stopped the president's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program when he was trying to stop that. They stopped detention and separation of immigrant families crossing the U.S. illegally. They stopped ending humanitarian protections for migrants from disaster-stricken countries. They stopped any restrictions on sanctuary cities. They stopped the 2017 travel ban. They stopped allowed government facility abortions for immigrant teens living in the U.S. illegally. Judges appointed by Democrats, particularly Mr. Obama, have ruled against him. The only exception is Mr. Trump's border wall plan, which an Obama-appointed judge allowed to continue. Fox News reported that federal judge William Orrick, who last Tuesday blocked President Trump's order to withhold federal funds from sanctuary cities, reportedly bundled hundreds of thousands of dollars for President Barack Obama. Orrick of the Northern District of California issued an injunction against the Trump administration after the city of San Francisco and county of Santa Clara sued over the president's plan to withhold federal funds from municipalities that harbor illegal aliens. And that same judge reported Fox, issued a restraining order in 2015 against the advocacy group responsible for undercover videos purportedly showing Planned Parenthood employees plotting to sell baby organs. Orrick, the same judge, raised at least $200,000 for Obama and donated more than $30,000 to groups supporting him. Now, Judge John Tiger, who was also appointed by President Trump and stopped the order on asylum last week, Open Secrets lists five donations from him to political candidates, all of them Democrats, including Barack Obama. And that leaves us to believe that Justice Roberts is either naive to believe that all these judges are fair and don't have any loyalty, or we could say that he's undermining the results of the 2016 presidential election. That's what Conservative HQ is saying. And we're going to put this on our Facebook page because I think you should read it and share it. Is Chief Justice John Roberts naive or disingenuous? Well, last week, climate assessment was released the day after Thanksgiving, and it created quite an uproar, however quiet, over the holidays. And we're going to talk about it when we return. Do these forest fires and hurricanes indicate that climate change means doom and disaster for us? That's what they're saying. Is it true? Stay tuned.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me, it is God speaking to us, revealing Himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about Himself, He reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
It gives an impetus to share your faith when you think you've got answers to objections that you expect people to bring up.
The American Family Studios video series, Intro to God's Revelation, featuring Dr. Richard Howe, shows how God has revealed Himself in nature and His Word, and how we can rightly understand what God has said.
These truths are just a part and parcel of the Christian life. It isn't just for the professional clergy.
Learn the fundamentals of how to approach and understand the Bible in an age of skepticism. This 6-week video curriculum is perfect for your Sunday school class or study group, and it can prepare you to give a defense of God's Word and how He speaks to us in nature.
Knowing whether and how God communicates is a safeguard against false claims about God communicating.
Intro to God's Revelation, DVDs and workbook, are available for purchase at afastore.net or call 877-927-4917.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The mainstream media wants you to believe President Trump intentionally tear-gassed women and children at the border. That's their narrative, but it's a fake news narrative. Border agent Rodney Scott was on CNN the other day explaining what really happened in Southern California at our nation's busiest port of entry.
When the threat is to our personnel or to protect others, you've got to do what you got to do. What I find unconscionable is that people would intentionally take children into this situation. What we saw over and over yesterday was that the group, the caravan, as we call them, would push women and children towards the front and then begin basically rocking our agents.
So imagine for a moment the kind of a man that would use a woman and a child as a human shield. Those are the kinds of men President Trump is trying to keep out of the country. Very dangerous men. The president is right to take an uncompromising stand on securing our border, even if it means shutting down the border. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Paris is burning. Deadly protests continue after the French government imposed a new carbon tax. France is planning to spend about $15.2 billion by 2022 to develop its transportation infrastructure. Back in the U.S., 13 federal agencies here in Washington rolled out a serious warning about the environmental and economic threat of climate change for the United States. President Trump isn't sold.
I don't believe it. You're going to have China and Japan and all of Asia and all of these other countries, you know, addresses our country. Right now, we're at the cleanest we've ever been.
The 1,600-page report's findings include temperatures in the U.S. are 1.8 degrees higher than 100 years ago. Seas are 9 inches higher. Heat waves, hurricanes, and wildfires are more severe. Climate change could cut GDP by 10% by 2100 if there are no changes.
Reasonable people can differ about how much and how rapidly. But I think it's clear that it's changing, and it's clear that humans are a contributing factor.
You're going to see devastation to our crops. You're already seeing the hurricanes because of the ocean warming, and you're certainly seeing in vivid color those horrible wildfires out west.
As for those devastating wildfires, some California lawmakers say hotter, drier weather has been a key factor.
Climate change is a very real part of this problem, no doubt about it. But also, it is the management. The forests have not been properly managed. counties for the last 70 years.
Utah Senator Mike Lee says he hasn't seen an effective solution.
All the proposals I've seen so far that would address any of these issues would devastate the U.S. economy and have little or no benefit.
Critics are using this as an opportunity to go after President Trump for withdrawing from the 2015 Paris Climate Accord championed by his predecessor. The White House notes the development of this report began under President Obama and says the next one will provide more transparent and data-driven information.
Well, isn't that interesting? Sandy Rios back with you. This happened the Friday after Thanksgiving. So while we were all enjoying our family still on that Friday, this was being released. So you heard what Mike Emanuel said. You heard the claims that temperatures are going to go up, or they are up something like 8 degrees. The seas are going to be 9 inches higher. GDP is predicted to go down by 10% by, I think, 2100. These storms and fires and hurricanes are going to get increasingly worse, and the world is coming to an end. Well, is that true? Because if it is true, we'd better be concerned, don't you think? I've asked someone who knows better than I. I'm out of my element of expertise, that's for certain, when I talk about scientific issues. But I've been following this for years and certainly have my hunch about what makes sense and what doesn't. But Dr. David Ligatis is a scientist himself. He's a professor at the University of Delaware. He's a senior fellow at the Cornwall Alliance. And let me just say, he has his degrees in mathematics and geography and climatology. He has his PhD in climatology. He has written extensively about this and worked as the co-director of the Delaware Environmental Observing System and also the director of the Center for Climatic Research. So I could go on and on, but then we wouldn't talk. So David Ligatis, thank you for joining us this morning.
No problem. Pleasure to be here.
Oh my goodness, your name. I feel like, do you ever watch Hyacinth Bouquet on Keeping Up Appearances on BBC?
No, I do not.
Okay, well, see, this is an odd way to start the show, but her name is spelled B-U-C-K-E-T, but she says it's Bucket, but she says her name is Bouquet. So we're going to say the same thing with your name here, David.
That's okay.
I think Ligatis. I think we
a lot
should.
Worse.
What exactly do you teach at the University of Delaware?
Well, right now at the University of Delaware, I teach statistics because largely I've been shunned out of teaching climate classes because we don't want students to hear the truth.
Yes, we
Amazing
surely
with our
do
universities,
not.
Huh?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Honestly, to be honest, when I read your resume, I found it kind of amazing you were still employed at a public university, knowing what you've written and what you've said. So. Let's get into this. Even the words to try to discuss this are difficult because it's so wordy would be the thing that strikes me right away. They all have lofty names, and all the positions have lofty names. And so for people out of this industry, it's a little challenging. But let me just say, the U.S. Global Change Research Program issued its second report last Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Dr. Ligatis, I guess the question is, first of all, who issued this? It was 13 different agencies of the federal government?
Yeah, it's been required by law that I think every 10 years or so, there's a requirement that we have to issue a climate change program release. It's sort of the equivalent of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which has a mandate to do it every 5 years. But we've gotten behind in certain years, and when these come out, these are always far more extreme, far more, the world's going to end close, immediately than the IPCC report is.
I didn't mean to go to the political first, but I just have to, because I when this came out, I couldn't help but think about the ousting of Scott Pruitt. Scott was the head of the EPA, and of course, he's a notorious I guess he would probably share our views on climate change, that he does not believe it's man-made. So he was ousted for other reasons, I guess, but I still think that was the driving force. So what did the EPA have to do with this report? Were they involved in it in any way?
I'm sure they were. I mean, it's a number of agencies that put this together. I mean, ever since William Ruckelshaus sort of took over the new EPA back in the 70s, I guess it was, that the EPA has been an agent for human-induced change. You can't say that, wow, things are getting cleaner, air is cleaner, the water is cleaner, we're much more efficient, all things are going well. It's got to be, we've got to have more and more regulations. We've got to have more and more things going on. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, for example, a friend of mine who works in Florida at a water treatment plant, he said he could get in trouble if the tap water, or the drinking water, I should say, gets into his effluent, because the constraints he has on drinking water is less than the constraints on the water that he uses for their business.
Isn't that something? Do you sense that those environmental regulations, I understand that lots of them have been reversed under the Trump administration, but have they still not gotten down into the deep level as you're describing? Is that still the case for him?
I think that's largely the case. I mean, that making years and years of changes is going to be difficult and going to take a while. And we've had a different administration in for a little over a year now, or less than a year, I should say. And the question is going to be, or 2 years now, and the question is going to be, you can't undo two decades worth of damage in 2 years.
Yeah. Well, they certainly are trying, that's for sure. All right, I want to ask, let's start backwards with this. The report that was released on Friday, based on your reading and analysis of it, does it have any merit?
It's based on the worst possible scenario. There's a number of climate model simulations based upon carbon dioxide. It is based on the worst scenario you can imagine. Even the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says that it's likely that temperature increase by 2100 will be about 4 degrees Celsius. And this model run essentially says it's about 8 degrees Celsius. So it's twice what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change uses for their extreme scenario. It's a very extreme scenario, and of course, then you're expecting a climate model that predicts not just air temperature, but it's got to get precipitation, it's got to get hurricanes and things like that. And it's a surprise to a lot of people that the models just aren't good enough to really see the climate the way it is.
Is it customary? The first time I heard about making predictions based on models was that whole scandal. The Cambria scandal about the false information, false data. But using models, is that pretty much kind of a scientific practice that has merit in other areas of study?
It does in some senses. I mean, for example, if you're trying to figure out the stress load on a train, for example, going around a curve, and what the speed should be set, there are models to do it without actually wrecking a train to figure out what it is. But in this case, I mean, the forces on a train going around a corner is a really simple problem relative to the climate, which is a majestically marvelous type of interaction of a number of different things, I mean, even that we don't understand on many different scales. I mean, the issue is that, the model resolution sees, the state of Delaware is about one grid cell, whereas there's lots of variability going on within our small state. And so it really can't see the fine-grained details of what's going on. So we make sort of general assumptions as what we think's happening, what we think the process is, what we think is important, and then the model doesn't necessarily look like reality. So you get in and you start to do something called tuning, which is where you say, well, let me change some numbers to see if I can't get what I think looks right. And that's where the question comes, is are the models tuned to give us a warming of about 3 to 4 degrees Celsius for a doubling of carbon dioxide, or does that come simply as a result of specifying the best model and seeing what the answer is? And unfortunately, what we're starting to find is that some of that stuff has been hard-coded into the models, so the models respond almost in a predetermined particular way.
Dr. Fred Singer, who I know that you know well, he's the
yes.
He runs the Science and Environmental Policy Project in Northern Virginia. I kind of used this word. He said it's like a series of prophecies. Like it's nothing more than prophecy. And would you say that that's a fair assessment? Like, in other words, these models are speculation. The numbers are speculative. What's hard fact? What's hard and what's hard evidence here that they can base projections on?
Well, the hard evidence is what we've seen, let's say, over the last 20, 30 years. You know, how has the temperature changed as a result of increasing carbon dioxide? Why has it changed? What have we seen in terms of precipitation, in terms of hurricanes, with the idea that the past might be the key to the future? And then to determine, too, whether the models make sense, do the models suggest that what we've seen in the past is a reasonable scenario? Generally, the models always overstate the warming. They always have. We've had a case where from about 1999 to 2017, there was what was called the hiatus, where temperature really didn't change, where temperature was relatively flat, but the models continued to indicate that temperature should be rising. And there were all sorts of explanations posited, like, you know, the energy is being stored in the oceans, and it's somehow being tied up in a system, and at some point later, it's going to jump out at you like a leaping jaguar. I mean, these are non-scientific things, because you would expect that the climate system would behave, you would expect that the models would resemble the climate system if you're going to trust them. And if they look completely different than what's going on, you have to take back and say, well, wait a minute, that model can't be right. There's something fundamentally different. There's something fundamentally missing in what we're doing. And unfortunately, nobody's willing to do that at this point.
You know, the other thing that always strikes me, and again, I approach this just from a layperson, just in terms of common sense, David, I don't know how, it's not possible. It's just not possible to know what weather was like centuries ago to any degree of certainty. And they always talk as though they know that suddenly now, in the time in which we live right now, it's worse. There are more of these and less of these. I mean, is it even possible to know that to any degree of certainty? And if so, going back how far?
No, and the problem with the models is if you really, you know, if you got the hood off and you looked underneath at what was going on, the simulated change, I won't give you the numbers, but the simulated change in the activity based on human effort, based upon watts per square meter, the energy that's absorbed, okay, that amount is a small number compared to the natural variability that we observe and also compared to the model uncertainties. It's literally like looking for a needle in a haystack where you're going up to an elephant and you're bumping it slightly and wanting to try to figure out how it moves. I mean, the idea is the model simulations are such that the errors swamp the actual simulations that you're trying to figure out. And so what you're getting out the other end is really, you know, as we sort of refer to it, it's a signal-to-noise ratio problem. The noise swamps the signal to the point at which the signal becomes meaningless. But it's a signal we play on. We go to the worst-case scenario. We get a monstrous rise in temperature, and then we try to play that off as if every disaster you've ever seen in the past 2 or 3 years must be related to that, including heavy snowstorms.
Yes. Well, and we also have to point out what we have such short memories, even in the times in which we live, and we can't remember what happened last week. And so what happened last week was we called this global warming. And that became very sticky and uncomfortable because the globe, according to stats, they could not prove it. And they were found to be fraud. So now they've morphed it into climate change. And, of course, the win-win there is, of course, the climate changes.
Exactly.
Of course the climate changes. So we have these forest fires in California. It's a disaster. And they rush to make claims they shouldn't make. And let's talk about that one, David. Actually, yeah, let's just at least start that for a minute, then we're going to take a break and we'll come back and expand on it. But they're claiming, of course, that this is all because of man-made what? Global warming? The forest fires? What are they claiming?
Yeah, the Climate Central out of Princeton came up with a graph that's hit the newspaper recently, and essentially it shows that from about 1970, the amount of forest fire, the acreage burned per year, has increased. The problem is the data doesn't start in 1970. The data goes all the way back to the beginning of the last century. And if you look at the 20s and 30s, there were major forest fires that swamped what we have right now. The problem, of course, you just think about it. Once one of these big fires start, we can fight it with lots of people, with water, with planes coming in and so forth. They didn't have that back then. They just had to let everything burn. And so as a result, it's not fair to say this is the biggest wildfire season we've had on record, because the record does go farther back and shows that it was worse back in the 20s and 30s.
All right, let me stop you right there, and we'll come back in a second and talk about what we really think is behind that. My guest is Dr. David LeGates, is the professor at the University of Delaware, also a senior fellow at Cornwall Alliance. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What is the source of America's greatness? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Alexis de Tocqueville, a 19th century French political thinker and philosopher, had this exact same question. On the heels of the French Revolution, he came to America in 1831 to investigate America's ascendancy. In doing so, he found that America's greatness did not lie in her economic system, it did not lie in her banking system, nor did it lie in her educational system. He found America's pulpits aflamed with righteousness was the source of America's greatness. He opined that America is great because she is good. But when America ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Let us pray for a restoration of the flame of righteousness in our pulpits.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. What do you know? Hillary Clinton, Native American tribes, and Mexico all agree with President Trump on immigration. Hillary Clinton is telling Europe they've got to crack down on immigration to keep the wrong people out of their countries. Mexico is pledging to deport every single member of the invading caravan who commits a crime. And Native American tribes are trying to turn Thanksgiving Day into a national day of mourning rather than celebration because they're angry that unrestricted, uncontrolled immigration of people from other countries has decimated their native culture. So when Trump says we have to keep the wrong people out, Hillary agrees. When Trump says we have to deport criminal aliens, Mexico agrees. And when Trump says we have to restrict immigration to protect our culture, Native Americans agree. Who knew?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio. 80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love could save a life.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We recently learned that North Korea is preparing its people for the effects of electromagnetic pulse, or EMP. Whether that's because Kim Jong-un's despotic regime intends to initiate the use of such weapons with a nuclear arsenal he has no intention of dismantling is a matter of debate. What should no longer be is the reality that our vastly more vulnerable people and society must be protected against the potentially catastrophic effects of attacks involving electromagnetic pulse, or, for that matter, cyber warfare, sabotage, or powerful solar storms on the U.S. electric grid. I had the opportunity yesterday to participate in an extraordinarily exciting meeting in which the political, business, and military leaders of one of America's largest cities came together to begin making their community resilient against such mortal dangers. Wouldn't you want the same for yours? This is Frank Gaffney. Learn more at securethegrid.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We don't have to use our imagination anymore because we saw this play out over the past several months. The extreme summer of 2018, the unprecedented wildfires, which you alluded to, the floods, the droughts, the heat waves, the superstorms. the impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We're seeing them play out in real time on our television screens, in our newspaper headlines. And this latest report simply makes official, simply documents in a quantitative and rigorous and robust manner what we're already seeing. The effects of climate change are upon us. We are already seeing the danger posed by unchecked climate change.
So, Professor Mann, what's going to save us? Is it the right government, the right Congress, the right president, the right technological advances? Is it ourselves? I mean, what is the solution here?
It's all of the above. I wish there were a magic bullet, but in fact, we really have to focus as individuals on two different things. We have to make changes in our lifestyle that we're able to. There are lots of things that we can do that reduce our carbon emissions, and they make us happier, healthier. They save us money. Riding a bicycle when we can rather than driving, using public transportation, more energy efficient vehicles and appliances. All these things that we can do that are low-hanging fruit. They save us money and they help us reduce our carbon footprint. But at the same time, if we're truly going to tackle this problem, we need incentives at the highest level in our economy. That means that we need politicians who will be willing to do what's best for us rather than what's best for powerful special interests that they too often advocate for. By passing a bill in Congress, by putting in place legislation that will put a price on carbon, that will incentivize the shift away from fossil fuels towards renewable energy, that's already underway. We're already moving in the right direction. We just need to accelerate that transition.
That was Dr. Michael Mann. He's the director of Earth Systems Science Center at Penn State. And you hear how it goes. That's what we're hearing everywhere. Hollywood is all into this. Disaster is coming. We must use bicycles. We must stop driving our cars. We must recycle our trash. We must beat ourselves to death because we are responsible for the forest fires in California, the hurricanes in the Gulf, the disaster in North Carolina, all the flooding. It's your fault. And it's my fault, and we should be ashamed. Well, and all the scientists feel that way. Keep that in mind, because that's what we're being told. Well, Dr. David Leegates is our guest today. He's the professor at the University of Delaware. He's a senior fellow at Cornwall Alliance. And by the way, you may recognize Cornwall Alliance. Our good friend Cal Beisner is the founder of that. CornwallAlliance.org writes about this all the time, and I have to say right up front, no, not all scientists embrace this propaganda that we are hearing morning, noon, and night from our leftist media. A new report came out on Friday. It was a report on the current state. It, of course, painted a very bleak picture of how the oceans are going to rise, temperatures are going to rise, and it, of course, GDP is going to go through the roof. It also has a very damning part on agriculture and the effect it's going to have on our crops, and the sky really is falling. Dr. Leegates, let me just ask you this first. I'm sure you're sick of hearing this, but I want you to address the fact that all scientists, all reputable scientists know that this is true. They write about it and affirm it. What is wrong with you, sir?
The 97% consensus, 97% of all scientists agree. It's only a handful of us that don't, and we're both mostly paid off by oil and gas interests. That is continuation of the lie. The idea is that the 97% number was shopped around. Originally, Naomi Oreskes came up with 100%, and that was easily debunked because all you have to do is find one. And then they sort of settled on 97 because it sounds like, well, if you hear a number of people on the radio, that's probably the 3%. 3% is probably vocal enough. But, I mean, the issue is that the American Meteorological Society did an interview with actual meteorologists and climatologists, and they found that only two-thirds thought that anthropogenic climate change played a significant role. I don't think that anthropogenic climate change is a hoax. I think it does change. I mean, I think carbon dioxide in the atmosphere increases the temperature, but nowhere near what we're talking about. And certainly when you start to get out to the ancillary things of hurricanes, wildfires, tornadoes, all sorts of things like that, that then we're in the realm of pure speculation. So this idea that everybody agrees, in fact, in a lot of cases, I've had people talk to me and say, you know, I agree with you. I just can't come out and say it because I've seen what's happened to you, and, you know, I just don't want that to happen to me. So there's an awful lot of pressure put on people in my position to say, you know, they're crackpots, they're not well trained, this, that, and the other, in order to keep everyone else quiet and on board.
And it's working. You know, we started in the first segment where you hinted at least that your training isn't climate change or global environmental issues. This is your expertise, and yet you can't teach it because you're not allowed because you have the wrong viewpoint. So that's one huge punishment. The other one is, as I understand it, Doctor, the professors cannot get money for research if they don't toe the party line on this. So your work dries up, your research, your resources dry up if you don't agree with them. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. I mean, the funny thing is, the University of Delaware had a PhD in climatology, and I was one of the first people to get one. And since then, we've gotten rid of it. Now we're trying to build it again. But the weird thing is, like I said, I have a degree in climatology from this university, but there are people in power that have kept me out of teaching climate classes. The other thing, too, is I know or have been told that I'm on a federal do not fund list. And at first, when they told me that, I thought, well, you know, that's fanciful and all that. Except I've submitted a number of grants, some of them which had nothing to do with climate change. And they never get reviewed. I mean, it's not that they get reviewed and they're bad reviewed, that kind of stuff. This is, they just don't get reviewed. You never hear from them again, and then the program officer figures out who you are and then refuses to talk to you about it. There's something funny going on in the system. And, of course, we all know what it is. It's that, you know, that back in when I was teaching at the University of Oklahoma back in 1990, they had the celebration of the 100th year of the land run. And we had a number of people come in to talk about where various things were going in the future. And we had Bob Correll came in to talk about the future of climatology and meteorology. And he said, you know, the problem has been that all the money has gone to the solid earth geophysicists who dig holes and to the interstellar atmosphere astrophysicists who have big telescopes and send up spacecrafts. And he said, you know, they get all the money. We haven't gotten much. But we're on the verge of starting to get lots of money, particularly with this climate change. And I'm expecting him to go in and say, you know, now we're going to be able to learn much more about climate, much more about the way the world works. He didn't say that. His take-home message was, let's not kill the goose that's laying the golden egg. Tell the Congress what they want to hear. Tell them how bad it's going to be. We'll continue to get funding. And that's exactly what's happened.
It is exactly what's happened. And let me drop in just a word on behalf of Cornwall Alliance. This is an organization started by Cal Beisner, and it's a configuration of other people like Dr. Lee Gates, who are scientists and who study this issue very seriously. And you can see that we could tell story after story of people being punished for their wrong thinking on this. They don't have the politically correct thought. And it's not a leap to believe it's happening, is it? Look what's happening to our children in public universities. And so Cornwall Alliance does some great work on this. And right now, by the way, I want to say, you can find their information at cornwallalliance.org, cornwallalliance.org. And if you would like to help them financially, they would be so grateful. And any amount given to them, they'll send you a copy of Roy Spencer's book, Global Warming Skepticism for Busy People, which sounds like a good Global Warming Skepticism for Busy People. Just go on the cornwallalliance.org and it'll be evident how you can make that donation and get that book.
That is an excellent book, by the way. I think that's an excellent gift for giving to Cornwall Alliance. And Cornwall Alliance is a compendium of scientists, of economists, of clergy, of lay people, all that are interested in the common goal, and that is making life better for everyone on the planet.
And loving the planet, loving God's creation, loving it and taking care of it, cherishing it, just not telling lies about it, and using it as a hobby horse to create some sort of global governance that hands off power to, I hate to use this word because it's so overused, to the elites, to the power brokers, because that's really what's happening. And if we don't believe it, you know, it's funny, not funny, but the headlines coming out of Paris are Exhibit A of what they have in mind. I should let you speak to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean you heard Dr. Mann speaking on the voiceover that let us in. Yeah, the idea is we need to change our way of life. We need to withdraw. I mean, the worst thing is they want Africa to remain undeveloped, you know, sort of the noble native concept. the idea somehow is that we developed, we improved ourselves by the Industrial Revolution, but they must remain the way they are. And the problem is, of course, you know, they have 18 children because 16 of them are probably not going to survive to the age of puberty. So the issue is, you know, how fair is it for us to say they can't develop? I mean, that's really anti-human. And this is one of the things that bothers me about the so-called creation care movement. The idea is that, you know, obviously Jesus Christ is God's greatest gift to mankind, but the question is, what is God's second greatest gift? And they argue that it's creation, and that's why we need to treat creation almost, not quite, but almost as if it's deity, because it's God's second greatest gift. But my reading of Genesis is that after creation was given to Adam, he was found it lacking, and what he really needed was companionship. And so I find that the second greatest gift is not the creation, but is a specific creation, and that is other human beings. And so that's why energy is very important in bringing people out of poverty and bringing people out of destitute. As John Christie says, he's a climatologist with the Cornwall Alliance who works with Roy Spencer, as he says, you know, life is short and life is brutal in some of these places. And a little bit of energy would make a lot of difference. But if we're going to restrict energy to very expensive sources of wind and solar and do away with fossil fuels, which may very well be the key to making, giving these people a life above what they, at a subsistence level they have now, I find that completely unconscionable.
Well, and the way they want to do away with fossil fuels, they want to do away with the use of them here, which is why I brought up Paris. Paris, of course, is leading the charge on the Paris Climate Agreement, and Macron is a big believer in this whole nonsense. And so what's happened is he's added this very significant tax onto fuels that to fuel their cars. They already pay a ton of money in Europe to fuel their cars. So now it's gone up, and that's why there are riots. That's why they're burning things in the street, because it cripples the economy. It cripples the working people. The goal of the elites is to get rid of it altogether, to make it impossible to use so that you'll get back on your bicycle or your horse and forget about driving a car. So that, fill in the blank, David, why? So that what? So that they can save the planet, or so that they can gain power, or both?
I agree. I'll say something that's controversial. Energy is freedom. If the idea, I spent a little bit of time in the Soviet Union just before it collapsed, and one of the things that a lot of people were telling me is they didn't realize how bad it was in the Soviet Union. One guy was living in Czechoslovakia at the time, and he said, you know, we always thought they were high on the hog, and it was taking a while to work down to us. But the idea is, if you have communication, if you have transportation, essentially you break the totalitarian control. Because if you don't allow people to move, if you don't allow them to act, if you don't allow them to interact and talk to one another, if you don't, you know, you can restrict all of that by restricting energy use. And therefore, you can get power and control over people. If you allow them to have energy, you allow them to communicate, you allow them to move around, you allow them to see other ideas, it benefits us all. And so that's my fear, is that this restriction of energy, this idea, it really is a restriction not just on personal freedom, but on freedom in general.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, I had a good friend that was not a Christian, who's actually a very famous person. I'm not going to mention his name, but he became a very well-known writer, and he started writing on environmental issues. And through that, when he saw the underbelly of that movement, he said he saw wickedness for the first time, where he really understood it. And he actually became a Christian through that whole process. And again, he didn't come, he has not made that public, but it's just kind of amazing. It's pretty a dark and evil movement, and it is about all the things that Dr. Lee Gates has told us. By the way, Dr. Lee Gates has some great articles. We'll put one of them on our Facebook page, Climate Change and the Christian Faith, which I think you'll find very interesting. Go to cornwallalliance.org for more information to equip you to talk about this with your friends and neighbors so that we'll know how to think, because heaven knows we are being propagandized from morning till night on this issue, too. Dr. David Lee Gates, thank you so much for joining us today. Sadie Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.